Hi, welcome to Grafted, Jewish Roots of Christianity. I'm your host, Stephanie Pavlantos. Today, my guest is Miriam Stallsworth. And welcome, Miriam. I am so pleased to have you on today.
I am so glad to be here. It's a beautiful sunny day in Oklahoma, so that is wonderful.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here. And I'm just to give a little bit about you. You were born in Chicago. You were used to be a school teacher. You were raised in a Jewish community, so you were never introduced to a church, never introduced to the New Testament or anything like that, like we all kind of take for granted of, because I was raised in church, basically. Mm-hmm. So you had never been there. At some point, and I forget when you said, but at some point during your life, you had been studying the Old Testament, and you found Messiah through the Old Testament scriptures. And I'll ask you to expand on that a little bit. First, you and your husband are founders of the Beit Amin Messianic Congregation in Oklahoma. And I think I read that that's been going on for 40 years, or you told me 40 years
ago. Yes, 40 plus years now.
Your husband has since passed away just recently.
Yes.
In English, that is known as the House of My People.
Yes.
You do a lot of teaching. You part of the worship dance scene. But you have also been part of the Rooted Cafe, which we've had different guests. We've had Charlie Brown on here. And you've also been part of the Hebraic Root Network, where you have taught at conferences and whatnot. And all that can be found on YouTube as well. So
yes.
So you are quite accomplished. You have done a lot of teaching. And I've actually looked at some of your teaching, and I'm very impressed. By, you know, I think there's a lot that all of us can learn from the things you have shared. And so I appreciate you being on here and just sharing with my audience.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here.
Tell me a little bit more about how you found Messiah, because boy, when as Gentile Christians, you know, we tend to point everyone to John, everyone to the New Testament. But here we don't often hear that people mm-hmm. found him in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, growing up, my father was a roofing contractor. I have one younger sister. And so at the holiday time, you know, he would get presents. So he would have people come over, and we would have one side of the house with the streamer, Merry Christmas, and the other side, Happy Hanukkah, you know. And so, and my mom would like, let me do like color Easter eggs because I saw somebody doing that. So there was no really understanding of why. There was a large Catholic church down the block when I was growing up in Chicago, and I would see these little girls in white outfits, and I said, oh, these are so beautiful. Looks like a bride. And it was their, I guess their Holy Communion or Holy, whatever that's called, maybe. And so my mother made me a dress like that. And I remember like white paper mache or something as a veil. But I didn't understand, or nothing was really explained to me, except that I knew, I had all this culturally Jewish, but religiously, my grandparents, one side of my father's side, came from, Lithuania.
Okay.
And I just recently looked up and Jewish, it's a Jewish genealogy of my maiden name, which is Kowarski with a Y. It's now Polish, it's Russian. And I saw all of these people that died in the Holocaust with that name.
Wow.
No one ever said that. No one ever talked about it. So I was just, oh my gosh. But I moved to Oklahoma when I was about 28 years old, and it was for work. And wow, coming from Chicago and Skokie, which is predominantly one of the largest Jewish population and of Holocaust survivors also.
Wow.
So moving from Chicago, Skokie area, where we were closed on the Jewish holidays.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a Christmas program, my father would say, now you mouth the word Jesus. As many Jews, we thought all people that were non-Jewish were Catholic. And his first name was Jesus, his last name was Christ. And we didn't know. I didn't know. And I know right before I moved to Oklahoma, there was a Jews for Jesus man who was on the streets, and he was trying to talk to me. And at that time, I thought, what a traitor. What a traitor. I'm Jewish. Why are you trying to bring this to me? And later on, I met this man as I was a believer, and was pretty incredible. But when I came to Oklahoma, and then I met my husband, Charles, and we lived next door to a pastor from New York. So he understood a lot of Jewish people. And everyone was asking me out to eat. And I thought, oh, wow, this is so much fun. They're just getting to know me. And I was starting to teach in the school right around where I lived. And about after 5 minutes or so, they said, well, Miriam, are you ready to accept Jesus as your personal savior? And I thought, I don't even know who Jesus is. And you're asking me to change my whole lifestyle?
Right.
And I was a little put out because I thought you were just asking me to be friends. And then they started saying to me, now go to this church and check it out. Don't go to this church. This is dead. And so, you know, you don't understand all those denominations, everything.
Right.
So I thought I was a well-educated person. I was a teacher, but except for like Abraham and Moses and Miriam, I didn't know very much about the Bible. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to start reading. And as a Jewish person, we are told not to open the New Testament. We only read the Holy Scriptures. And so that's what I did. And I remember looking out at a window outside my house one Friday night in Chicago. Things are so close together, the apartments. And I saw this family. And the mother was lighting candles, and they were singing, and they were rejoicing. And I guess it was like being a good peeping Tom, right? And I looked in the window, and they were celebrating. And I thought, I want to do this. I want to do this Shabbat. And I don't know how to do it. And so I started opening my Bible, and there's something that I knew. I was looking for a Jewish Messiah. And I did not see that in the way it was presented in the church, unfortunately. And so after about a year, but I cried out every night, Stephanie, are you Yeshua, Jesus? Are you the Passover lamb? And it finally, close to a year, I felt that God spoke to me out of Exodus about as he was the Passover lamb. So that's how I came to the Lord. And when I got into, we were in a regular church for a while. It was so difficult for me. I didn't know at that time this church, it was many years ago, had hymnals or be Christmas time and they'd be doing these songs. I had no clue. I didn't know one of them. One of them. So it's a different world. But as Paul, or Rabbi Saul, Hebrew name, was called to be all things to all people. And so I think I've hopefully mastered that after these 4 years.
Wow, that's amazing. I love that story, but it does make me a little sad because we do take away Yeshua's Jewishness and we make it so much harder for the Jews to come to know who he is, because they see him, like you said, as some kind of Catholic God, some kind of false God, really. And I read this in an article, but our Messiah, as far as the church's Messiah, doesn't keep Torah, didn't keep Shabbat, didn't do this. So we confuse the Jews because they know that Messiah must have come and had kept the Torah perfectly, you know, had kept Shabbat, had kept the feast, had kept those things that we consider are irrelevant and old, gone away, done away with.
Right. I think one of the greatest things is to see in what you're doing in your ministry is the whole Bible.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into the church before, and I was into a denominational church for a while, they gave me this little tiny New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, yes, read the book of John.
Right.
And when I first read it, some of it, and different parts. It said, and the Jews, like it was like this terrible thing, the Jews, you know. And it made me sad because there is something in you when you are, it's our heritage. It's deep down inside.
Right.
And if you see him there from the beginning in Genesis and the light of the world and the light coming in, it's not something that started with just the New Testament.
Exactly.
And that's what I think is the biggest downfall. They say that, oh, well, these are all done away because Jesus came. But he was there from the beginning.
Right. So true. Because, I mean, that is really what got me started. When I met a Jewish man, well, actually, I should say he was a Gentile, but he had studied the scriptures in Hebrew and had gone to Israel and studied it so much that he knew so much more about the Old Testament than I had ever heard from anybody else. Since then, even reading books where you find Yeshua in the Old Testament, because I think that as growing up in a Christian church, different denominations, they don't see Jesus in the Old Testament. And so therefore they think he's only in the New Testament. And even a church I was going to for 12 years before the Lord called us out, I remember talking to this couple and they said, we don't have to read the Old Testament. It's not relevant anymore. We don't need it. And I'm like, I couldn't disagree with you more, actually. And I said, it's a shame. You don't know what you're missing out on. And I just started digging into the Old Testament even before that. And it just became like a passion. I felt like God wanted me to show people where Jesus was in the Old Testament, Yeshua, of course, and what things we have been mistranslating and misunderstanding about the Old Testament. I think it's so important. It's not two separate books. It's one book of redemption and restoration and the plan of God to restore everything back to the Garden of Eden. And if we don't know about the Garden of Eden, then we can't understand. We can't really even understand Revelation without understanding the Old Testament.
Right.
So
okay. I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
So, but you have a kind of a ministry on Shabbat evening, Friday evening that you have started with your neighbors. You want to share that a little bit?
And sure. Growing up, there was a lot of Jewish bakeries. And since my parents didn't keep Shabbat, which was very interesting, though, I only was blessed with one grandfather, and he was in his 80s when I was a little girl. All my other grandparents I never met. They were deceased.
Okay.
And so he was very observant. But I was little. I didn't know very much. Mm-hmm. But my father did. After he passed, he went to synagogue every day. Mm-hmm. And did the mourner's Kaddish prayer. So it was deep within him. But I never made challah. I never made it. And the bakeries in Chicago was very yellow. They used a lot of yellow food coloring because it's an egg-based twisted bread.
Right.
And it was kind of dry. And I came to Oklahoma. And then as I started to learn more about doing the Sabbath and that, I thought, you know what? I'm going to get a recipe. I never baked I wasn't a baker. I loved to cook. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to make this challah. And over the years, I've perfected it and given out the recipe to so many. And it's part of my preparation day is making it. But as new people come in my neighborhood, what a better way to introduce them to yourself and who I am. Mm-hmm. Is I bring them challah. I bring them loaves of bread. Mm. And one was a brand new neighbor that I had prayed for new neighbors. And I brought over the bread. And I never say challah because a lot of times people don't even know what it is. Or I don't say I'm Jewish and I just present them and welcome them into the neighborhood. And she had a son that was in the military, but he was studying to be a chef also, and said, Mom, I think this is Jewish bread. I think this is challah. And then she spoke to the neighbors next door to her, and she goes, oh, yeah, they're Messianic Jewish. They're wonderful people. And we've been watching The Chosen about Shabbat. And so I invited both of those families to Shabbat dinner on Friday night.
Wow.
And all they had to do was walk down a few steps, to my house. That went on for over a year and a half, and now they're a part of the congregation. And Jennifer, the woman of the house, she found out that she was part Jewish.
Wow.
Didn't even know it, and had been looking, just recently found out she wanted to know about her heritage. And she had been going to a denominational church and was getting dissatisfied with different things. And then as we were reading, and as you said, you know, it's such a bad translation. Old. This is old. And this is new. So like, this is better. And that's all done away. Right. Such bad terms that we've come to use and misunderstand. But as we were doing the Shabbat dinner, and we do Psalm 112 over the husbands or the man, and the Proverbs 31 woman over the woman. Right. And they look into each other's eyes. Most families, when they start doing, they just start crying. They just start crying. How beautiful is this? I was blessed to be able to to help so many women how to set up Shabbat. Now, each of us have our own spice, but that we can incorporate, do it how you do it. But there's nothing more beautiful. And so I love this ministry. When I go to my, if I have to go to my doctor or to my dentist, they have children, I bring them loaves of bread. And they go, wow, she's coming with bread today. And my doctor said, Miriam, I have 5 kids. And when I bring this home, they are so excited. Wow. So wherever I go, if it's, you know, I will make them bread and have that. And I'll say to them, what can I pray for you? Mm. And you know, doctors are they never hear anybody. All they hear is the complaints of the people. And so I think this is, it's so easy to make the bread, and it's inexpensive. You know, eggs were really up for a while, but really to welcome somebody in the neighborhood and just say you care.
Yeah. You care.
Someone said I should write a book, say it all started with a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So I'll get up early if I'm going somewhere to the dot or to someone and bring them the bread, and they know they're loved.
Mm, that's awesome. It's such a beautiful story, because I think that it's just a small thing, really.
It's a very small thing, yes.
But it does make people feel seen.
Yes.
And appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because I remember, I mean, going to my first Shabbat in Israel, I actually wrote about it because I was so impressed by the family who allowed us to come into their home on Shabbat and have that Shabbat meal with them. Watching them, like you said, recite scripture to each other, the husband sing Psalm 31 over his wife, and blessing their children. And you felt like, oh my goodness, I'm intruding. You know, you felt like, oh, this is such a personal thing.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it was beautiful.
It's beautiful. And how many times do you sit 2 to 3 hours at a table? I always pray who I'm going to have. And I usually have 7 or 8 people around my table. I've had as many as 15. Mm. And I know how to plan ahead. I'll have my table set by Wednesday, because we go from Shabbat to Shabbat. What do they say? It's a midrash, but Sarah's, you know, her windows were always open. Her lights were always on, and Abraham and Sarah bringing guests into the home. So when I pray about who I'm going to have, and most people, when it's their first or second time, they just cry through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's not something, you know, when in the beginning, sometimes people will say, oh, well, I can't do this, or I can't, you know, it takes away a lot of the sports events because they're on Saturday. Right. And I know with a lot of your probably viewers and whatever, that when they start doing this, their family starts saying to them, oh, now you're becoming a Jew.
Oh, I know. I heard that too.
Yes. And oh, it grieves your heart, doesn't it? Like, well, this is bad. Wasn't our Messiah a Jew? And I think, you know, everybody has different opinions about the Chosen, but they have done a beautiful job of exposing mm-hmm. Yeshua. They don't use him as God of salvation, that name that his mother used, but they show the Shabbat. They show him kissing the mezuzah on the door when he comes in,
right,
and doing these things. Mm-hmm. Are they traditional? Yes.
Yes.
And a lot of people have hang-ups like, well, you know, I'm not doing this anymore, but I'm going to do this, and I'm afraid to do this. And I just say, you know, embrace yourself in the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we miss. We miss the beauty.
The beauty of it.
Those traditions that Jesus himself did, and we get caught up in our own traditions that are not even biblical, you know,
not even really, biblical,
because God made a big point in Leviticus when he basically burned up Aaron's two sons because they came in and decided they were going to worship him the way they wanted to worship him. And we miss out on a lot when we decide that we're going to worship God the way we want to, the way we've been taught, you know, whether it's through the Catholic Church, whether it's through the Protestant Church, whether what denomination, you know.
Right.
But when we don't worship him the way he laid out in Scripture in the Old Testament, we miss out on a lot.
Miss out on a lot, or even the understanding. And one of the most beautiful things at the Shabbat table one night, my next door neighbor, we were reading and it said, this is a perpetual, this is forever. And she started crying and she said, how did we miss this? She said to her husband, over all these years, how did we miss this? This says we're supposed to be doing this forever. Mm-hmm. And I think like we talked in the very beginning, well, Jesus came and none of this applies now.
I know.
And that's so totally wrong because he's going to come back. Mm-hmm. And all of us who already had those pre-classes and have been preparation, right? We're going to say, yay, we've got it already, you know, and we're going to help others. But how wonderful it's going to be, because it is a remnant right now, isn't it? It is a remnant.
Mm-hmm. I was telling a young friend the other day, I said, you know, in Paul's letters, his writings, he said that we were to be one man in Messiah, you know, one people in Messiah. And we weren't that. We haven't been that.
Right.
And that happened very quickly through our church fathers. I mean, I don't think we as a church know enough about our church history, that our church fathers were somewhat anti-Semitic. And I've heard people even say, well, don't you know Constantine said this and this and this? I said, do I follow Constantine or do I follow Jesus?
Right.
And then I had someone comment on my website that, well, it says in the Bible that the disciples met on the first day of the week. And I said, well, if you read that carefully, it says they broke bread on the first day of the week. That means they had a meal together on the first day of the week. It wasn't a service. It wasn't Shabbat.
No, and then it's translate. Sometimes say, well, then now we've made it the Lord's Day, you know.
Yes, and the Lord's Day was never
separate. No. No,
it was the day he celebrated Shabbat, and
right,
and we don't really realize that. I mean, I heard something very interesting, or probably more or less read it, but we don't realize that Yeshua was the one who rested on the seventh day in Genesis.
Yes.
Yeshua was the one who said, "I will not work," and
right.
I think it's very easy to separate God and Yeshua, instead of seeing them as one, because they are one, and Yeshua did nothing unless God told him to when he was here on the earth. But they're still, it's like one tree, three branches. They are one. They think alike.
Right.
And Yeshua would not think opposite of his father or do something opposite of what his father has laid down. And Yeshua was kind of the, you know, he was the flesh. God is spirit. So when things were done and when he came and talked to people, it was Yeshua who came and talked to people who walked through the garden with Adam and Eve, because he was the one with legs, you know?
Yes.
I mean, he was.
He did have legs, and they weren't shocked by that, I don't think, at first, you know?
Yeah. So it was Yeshua there in the garden. It was Yeshua there at creation. And so how would he go against what he put in the very beginning? And so I think that's where some of the disconnect become.
A lot of disconnect, yes. And I think on both sides.
Yes.
And I am I am so blessed. You know, it says to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. And when I meet Jewish people, since I was born and raised in a very Jewish community, I can talk all the talk and they see me as very Jewish. Mm-hmm. And then they'll ask me, well, why haven't I seen you in synagogue? Where have you? And I say, well, I attend Beit Meir. And I go, oh, and then all of a sudden, because they know we worship, you know, we believe in Yeshua the Messiah.
Right.
And that is, that's the thing that cuts yes. them off. But I think there's also ways of acknowledging that also. Mm-hmm. And it says to provoke them to jealousy. Mm-hmm. And from growing up Jewish, a lot of Jewish people do not keep the Sabbath.
Right.
It's only a small amount of remnant of them. And there's also, they don't keep the dietary and they'll do the holidays. But then as others come in mm-hmm. to the fold of Israel, they start doing this. Hopefully it does provoke them to jealousy. But I am so blessed because when we first started, my husband and I went to Hillel, and that was the, like in the universities, it was like a Baptist, you know, like for the young Baptists. I forgot what that was called, but it was for the young Jewish students. Mm-hmm. And they would come on Friday night. My husband and I, in the beginning, as we were learning, we had a friend and we went and we learned more about the Passover, and we're friends to this day. We have our own Torah scroll that's 200 years old. And that man, that Jewish man, got all the Jewish material, because you have to use special glue and everything. Our Torah scroll is over 200 years old, so it was needing some work, and it came out of Russia. And wow. he repaired it, and he gave lessons, and he showed everybody, and they were able to touch that skin, that animal skin, that kosher skin. Mm. And are we friends today? Yes. The original person that taught me Hebrew and taught me dance was a lady that goes to Chabad. I am friends with her today. She's on Zoom calls with me today. Mm. So we have kept this relationship because I live out my salvation and my sanctification daily. If they don't see the light in me, then it's me maybe doing something wrong. But I don't push anything on them. Nothing. I didn't respond well when I was pushed.
Right.
And right. It says when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I think that's a very beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And I am so blessed that at my husband's memorial or whatever, there were people from the Jewish community. We're very close with the Friends of Itamar, a settlement in Israel, that my husband and I were blessed to go to Israel. And the last day we met this couple in Itamar, where now it's so dangerous. Their sons are fighting. We've been friends now for 20 years. And we talk every day on WhatsApp. And so, isn't that wonderful? That's the way it should be.
Yes.
We're one. And one day we're going to be one. And that's why we call it the house of my people. We're getting all the tribes coming in. And my Jewish friends say, wow, you're bringing in the lost tribes. Go. And now we have an all Hispanic service
wow.
in the morning. That's all in Spanish.
That's
and they're learning Torah. And a lot of these had to convert to Catholicism a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then they find out they're Jewish.
Wow.
And even if they aren't, they're learning Torah. And what a wonderful group of people. But when I look out at the people in the congregation, mm-hmm. and there's different colors and there's different ethnic groups.
Right.
It's the house of my people.
Mm-hmm. That's what it means. Yes. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
And unfortunately, many very Orthodox Jews will say, no, you're Goyim. You're Gentile.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't do this. Or they shun you, and then you kind of feel less than or ashamed.
Right.
No. They just don't understand, because they were given the Torah to take it to the nations.
Right, right.
Some did very good, others didn't. But in ways you can't blame them, when, like you said, if churches would just do a study on church history, they would be astounded to see the hatred for the Jewish people. Even Martin Luther burned all their books and their Torah scrolls when they didn't accept the Messiah.
I know.
And that's so sad.
It is. And even like the cross can be offensive to them.
It can be very offensive.
Right, because of what it represented. It represented this group of Catholic Spaniards who went after them and wanted to kill them off. And so we don't understand it. We're not sensitive to it because we can't relate or because we just don't get it.
I think there is. There's so much misunderstanding. There's a little joke that said this boy was in school or something, and he was going to Catholic school, but he was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And there was the crucifix with, you know, Jesus on the crucifix, and they said, "Don't you want to convert? Don't you want to become Catholic?" He goes, "Oh no, I see what you've done to one of our boys. I'm not going there."
Exactly.
And it's so true. It's so true. I try to show the beauty of things and to see that one day we're to be one. We're supposed to be worshiping together, and when you have all of your own set of rules, it's very sad. Like we do great dancing.
Yeah.
It's not wild, crazy dancing. It's praising to God. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It all has meaning. In the synagogue, no, they don't dance. They don't dance because they see them. They're in mourning until the temple's rebuilt. But they will do it at weddings and bar mitzvahs, and that's what I grew up with. But then I learned all these other beautiful dances, and then you'll go to other denominations and, oh no, you can't dance. Oh no, that's all wrong. Or you can't have a glass of wine, or you have to have the wafers. You can't have the challah, you know, when you take your communion. That all started with Passover. So it was unleavened bread.
Right.
But the rest of the year, and I know when people come out of that, they go, wow, this is a lot better than those wafers we used to have to eat.
Yeah, I know.
And now we're food. And then the wine, we had a wonderful couple. They were a couple of color, and they had a congregation in Oklahoma City when there was the bombing and all that. And we went on Sunday. My husband was an electrician also and helped them, you know, because they needed help getting rewired and that. They started coming on Saturday. And then he asked my husband every Friday if he would go to the liquor store, and he didn't want to be in the liquor store to get the wine. But he taught his congregation, no, Jesus drank wine, and you will have your choice there. You can have grape juice or wine. And then I made them challah. And oh my gosh. So he explained to them, so they started doing that. So there's so much misunderstanding. If you don't know those appointed times, there's a misunderstanding.
Yes.
Like he went up for the Feast of Dedication. That was Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
nobody in the church a lot of times have no idea what the Feast of Dedication is.
Right. This is a little off the subject, but you're talking about the appointed times. But I recently learned, like, in Revelation, when it talks about a time, times, and half a time, it's actually talking about
mm-hmm.
Moedim. And that's the word for Moedim. So it's the appointed times. And so, and that's, of course, in Daniel as well. And so I thought that was interesting that that's the Hebrew word for Moedim. And so it's kind of referring back to the feast and the Sabbath and Shabbat. But you mentioned, and I started this thought and I don't think I completed it, but you kind of filled it in. But from something I read, it's prophecy that as we become one man, that we're coming to the end of the age, you know, because that's, we're coming into fulfilling that prophecy when you have Gentile and Jew serving the Lord together, side by side, worshiping together in the same congregation. And you see that, you know, I don't think many of my friends realize, and I've been put down a little bit for going backward and stuff. And I say that with quotes because that's kind of how it was put to me. And I think, well, what if we were never meant to go the way we are we have become. You know, what we have become was not in God's original plan, but to be one with those Jewish people in Israel, those Messiah loving people who wanted to serve him and bring in the Gentiles and teach them the prayers. Like, I think even in Acts 2, when it says that the disciples taught the prayers, so many times people just say, well, the disciples taught them to pray, but they were actually teaching them the Jewish mm-hmm. prayers, the same ones that Yeshua exactly. would have said.
Yeah.
And we miss these little nuances in scripture that actually are very, very specific.
You know, we do the Shema, proclaiming God is one, and we teach our children that, and to say it in the morning, in the evening, and there's even the bedtime Shema, which is so beautiful, about I forgive everybody, whether intentionally or non-intentionally, they have harmed me today. But you can understand when these prayers are over 2,000 years old or more, when then people, well-meaning, want to change some of the wording of it, and the Jews, some of the Jews, they don't really like that. And in a way, or they're going to tell you, we have a new calendar, we have a better way. Well, the Jewish people know that the calendar isn't right. They know it's not perfect. They did the very best they could. And when Messiah comes, he'll straighten all this out. But there's a great arrogance when, well, I figured this out, and they've had it. They've got it all wrong. You're worshiping on the wrong day. You're not celebrating this right, because they've got the calendar all wrong. Well, as a teacher in the school system, I could go with the calendar and say, this is Yom Kippur. I will be off for this day. And
right.
And yeah. That just makes sense. But you can understand, it's not really pride, but they've had this heritage for so long. Don't work this away from them.
And it's so true, because we were just talking about that, the co-pastor and I and my husband, and we were all talking about, you know, which calendar do we follow? And he said, you know, Ryan is his name and his brother is Rich. And he goes, when Rich works, he can say, I need this week off for the feast, this feast or that. And they can go to the calendar and they're like, oh, yep, it is. It is on there. And that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, it helps us. We decided to make a choice to stay and celebrate the feast on the calendar that we have, the Hillel calendar, I guess it's what it's called.
And, yes, Hillel calendar.
And that way, people who don't quite know what to do yet, they can at least look on their own calendars, because I have one here, and basically say, oh yeah, this is Passover, instead of confusing people with, oh no, it should have been on this date, or it's actually on this day, but just going by the calendar. And yeah, I mean, when you look at the scriptures and it says the 14th of Nisan, and you know, that's the first month of the year, I mean, it's not how our calendar is anymore, and I know it can be confusing, so
I think also it gets confusing for people when it was evening and morning the first day, that people think morning is starting at 6 o'clock in the morning, and that's why they did sunrise service. And he probably, the Messiah, probably arose on Havdalah, just when it was getting turning to dark.
Right.
And they take that Havdalah candle that's lit and they drop it into the wine and extinguish it. And there's so many beautiful pictures of the bookends of, you start the Erev Shabbat with the candles. Is it commanded? No, it's not commanded that you light candles.
Right.
And people have stopped doing that for a while, and then they missed it. It was a way for them, as a sign, to bring in the Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go all the way to the end with Havdalah. What a beautiful picture, because we're so reluctant to leave the Shabbat. It's not like, oh, I had to do this again and I could. That is such a wrong approach. We try to teach people, beautify the Shabbat. You can't wait to come to the table and leave the whole week behind.
Oh, I know.
You live longer. They say people that do the Shabbat live longer and gives our body a rest.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I did a whole podcast on Shabbat with somebody, and Amy Gunther.
Gunther from Taurus Sisters.
Yes. And yes. So, and it was wonderful. I mean, I can't believe the views that that episode got, but people, there is a curiosity, like, what is the Shabbat mean and why is that? And we talked about, it's right. about resting and right. how much we both look forward to Shabbat. You know, when I know, and I mean, and I'm like, not keeping like, oh, it has to start at this time. I'm not like that. Right. But when right. I know Friday evening's coming and I'm done with everything that I needed to do for that day and I can sit and I can relax and my husband and I enjoy a meal together and then we relax the rest of the evening. And then the next right. day we go to service and we come home and relax.
Relax.
And,
right.
and it's just, I look forward to it.
Right. How beautiful. And to have people over, like last week I had two people that had never had been to a Friday night Shabbat. And they were so excited. And that, you know, and does it take work? Yes. And it's usually the woman of the home that has to get it ready. But I start on Wednesday. I get my, start thinking about getting my table ready. Who can I invite? I pray who I think will go well together. And oh my gosh, they learned so much about a person in their congregation they really didn't get to know. And then they really get to know, like, unfortunately, Yeshua said, "Be gone, I never knew you. I never had that intimacy with you."
Right.
And I see that's what the Friday night is. It is intimacy. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know if you ever was stood up, but I can remember when I was 15, I had a crush on this boy. It was probably one of my first crushes, boyfriends. And mm-hmm. he was got his driver's license. And so he was coming over to take me out the next day. And he never showed up. He never showed up. And I kept looking at the clock. And I thought, that must be how God sees it.
Oh, wow.
I've offered you this appointed time, this time to dwell with me. And how many times are you going to say, I'm too busy?
Or no, it's a different day.
Or no, right. Or no.
I do it on a different day. And it doesn't mean that God is not there. I don't want people to think that God doesn't show up. But he already set the dates in advance that he will show up. Guarantee he will show up and be there. And he wants us to meet him. And we look at it the opposite. You come and meet me. And it was supposed to be, we come and meet him on his day.
And my husband would say, come into the vehicle of Shabbat. Mm-hmm. Get yourself into the vehicle of Shabbat. And you know, I think you and I are on the same. We're not saying this legalistically. Mm-hmm. And when people say, well, I can't do it like you do it, I'll say, you're not me.
Right.
Do it the way you need to do it for your household. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times a woman will say, well, my husband's not interested. How many husbands don't want to be loved on and given a beautiful dinner and set a blessing over or just love on them?
Right.
I mean,
even just praying, praying for your husband over the meal. And
Yes. So, you know, how beautiful. So, and if I can be available to any woman to say, I've learned how to do this work. I mean, when I was working, I would come home on Friday, you know, at 4:30 and people were coming at my house by 6:30. Oh, wow. And then once in a while, how dare they? They came early. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't gotten out of the shower. And I'm so tense. I'm so far. And then you get and you sit down and you see the beauty of the candles and the people. And it just something comes over you. It's so incredible. But I've learned how to do things early enough that I don't have that craziness of like, oh my gosh, I can't get this together.
Right.
And it's such work.
That's good. Well, thank you, Miriam. I appreciate you being here. This was a wonderful conversation, and I didn't get to half of the things I wanted to talk to you about, but Holy Spirit has a way of taking over, so I'm always
anytime I'm available, I'm here, and I will do. You are a delight also, Stephanie. May blessings be upon you and your household.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, share, and subscribe. You can find me on YouTube and my Facebook group, Discovering Our Hebrew Roots. Thank you for listening. See you next week.